Well, we've been talking about the triumphs and the trials, the testings of faith from Hebrews chapter 11. We've come through, we talked about there were people that were put in prison, they were in chains, they were stoned. We saw that the Apostle Paul was stoned, Stephen was stoned, Paul was stoned and left for dead at one point. And then it says in Hebrews, here we are in Hebrews chapter 11, they were stoned, they were sawn in two. Sawn asunder, says the King James Version. Sawn in two. I mean, it couldn't be more torturous. And it wasn't that they just wanted to kill the saints. They wanted to kill them and make them suffer in the process of killing them. They were stoned, they were sawn in two. And then in chapter 11 of Hebrews, in verse 37, it says, and they were tempted. They were tempted. Now, I suppose you would be tempted. You would be tempted to recant. You would be tempted to give up your faith. You would be tempted to do a lot of things. However, as scholars have studied this passage, the tempting, they have come across an ancient papyrus manuscript called P46. Well, they have a P, it's a papyrus manuscript, rather than a vellum manuscript. And they saw on that this ancient old manuscript omitted that phrase. They do not have the words, they were tempted. Now, textual critics now have looked at that. How come that particular papyrus doesn't have that word in it? Textual critics then see the phrase, and they realized that the phrase, they were sawn in two, is the Greek word epristhen, epristhen. And it's very similar to the phrase they were tempted, which is eperisthen, eperias. So they say, you know, it's possible that a scribal error, the scribe had occurred in the textual traditions. There are many variations in, as you know, there are thousands of Greek manuscripts, just thousands of them, and they have to go through them and compare them diligently. And the United Bible Societies, now coming out with their fourth edition of the Greek, omit the phrase, they were tempted. So it's very possible they were tempted. I mean, I think that, being sawn asunder, being stoned and everything, you might want to say, or burned at the stake or something, you might be tempted to give yourself up. I think that goes without saying. But this might not be the actual words that were written in Hebrews. They were put to death by the sword. They were put to death by the sword. You see that also in verse 37. You know, Isaiah, tradition has it that Isaiah was beheaded. We know that John the Baptist was also beheaded. What was he put to death with? With a sword, just chop his head off. They were put to death with a sword. And in verse 37 again, they were, notice this last phrase, and they went about. You see that phrase, went about? That Greek word means to just go around in various directions. They went about. They go around sort of aimlessly. They went about. And what did they go about? Because now they're driven. Where are these people who are persecuted? People want to kill you. They want to stone you. They want to chop you in half. They want to kill you with a sword and cut your head off. They want to do all these things. And you're on the run. You're on the run. In many of the cases, these saints were on the run. They had to get away. They were wandering about. They were going. They didn't have any particular place. And where did they go in? What was their garb? Listen to what it says here. In sheepskins and goatskins. Not in Brooks Brothers suits. Okay? Not in Hickey Freeman suits. Not in great, Eddie Bauer down jackets. They were in sheepskins, goatskins. Listen to the next phrase. Being destitute. You know what it is to be destitute? I have no home. I have no money. I have no things. I don't have any food. Destitute. They were afflicted. Yeah, they were suffering. ill-treated. Then you have the parenthetical expression, of whom the world was not worthy. They were wandering, W-A-N-D-E-R-I-N-G. That word means to proceed again without a proper sense of direction. It also means to go astray. You're off the path. You're going over here, you're wandering. You go over here, you're wandering. You don't have a specific direction. You're not going toward a goal. You're not going toward any place in purposely. Why? Because you're being hunted. Okay? You're being hunted. So here you have that same word in the book of 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 25. He says, for you were continually straying like sheep. Straying. You're going here, you're going there, you're walking around. But now you have returned to the shepherd and the guardian of your souls. So these people, they're destitute. They have nothing. They're ill-treated. They're mistreated. They're running around. They're trying to get away. And they're clothed in sheepskins and goatskins and wandering here and there aimlessly, destitute, ill-treated, afflicted. And where were they? Where did they go? What places would they go? Well, they were in where? Deserts, in verse 38. Mountains. Any place that they could find, some place to keep somebody from killing them and driving them out. Deserts and mountains. Listen to this. And caves. I'll dwell in caves to save my life. And holes in the ground. Just get in, dig a hole and get in this hole in the ground. And the scripture says, we go back a little bit in verse 38, of whom the world was not worthy. That says a huge amount. The world was not worthy of these people. And the world is so crazy. It's so stupid that they will kill the very best people. They will kill the people who don't want to hurt anybody, who will come to your aid, who will help you, who will love you, who will do good to you. They will, who are honest and forthright, they will kill those people. Listen to what David wrote in the book of Psalms, chapter 16, verses 2 and 3. David said to the Eternal, you are my Lord. I have no good beside you. As for the saints who are in the earth, they are the majestic ones in whom is all my delight. The saints are the majestic ones in whom is all my delight. The world kills the people who are the good ones, runs them out of society because and not realizing what a valuable asset these people are to society. You know, God's people are the ones that probably postpone God's wrath on the earth. You remember when, how many people Abraham said before you, how many good people have to be in Sodom? If I find 10, I mean, it started with 50. If I find 50 or 40, how many? If I find 10, it goes all the way down. Yes. You notice what 1 Corinthians 7 verse 14 said about husbands and wives? For the unbelieving husband is sanctified through his wife. And the unbelieving wife is sanctified, made holy, that's what the word sanctified means, made holy through her believing husband. For otherwise your children are unclean, but now are they holy. So here they are. Here they are. Wandering in sheepskins and goatskins, in deserts, in mountains, in caves, and holes in the ground. Here's the question. Was it worth it? If you're one of the saints, if you're a true devotee of God, and you believe in the Lord, the eternal God, and His Son, Jesus Christ, is it worth it to live that way? Being persecuted, being driven out, if the persecution comes. Now sometimes we've been very blessed. I'll tell you what. If it weren't for the Constitution of the United States, don't think things couldn't happen here. Don't think that. It could. In Europe, there were terrible things. That's why the founders of the Constitution said, no, we're not going to make a law. The government is not going to get into the religion business. Keep religion out. Because in Europe, they use the government as a tool to enforce religious beliefs on people. But in verse 39, all these, having gained approval through faith, God's approval. Whose approval are you gaining? You're not gaining the king's approval. Whose approval? Gaining God's approval through faith. Okay? So here they receive great praise. Gaining God's approval is praise from God. Approval to be spoken, that the Greek word means to be spoken well of, to have a good reputation. They have gotten a very good reputation in God's eyes. They have gained approval through their faith. Very similar to what is said in verse 2 of the same chapter, Hebrews 11, verse 2. For by it the men of old gained approval. That is, they got a good reputation. So these are the heroes. These are the heroes of the kingdom. All these people listed and many more. The world is not interested, by the way, in this type of hero. Okay? God is. This is the kind of hero God is interested in. The world's heroes are rock stars, movie stars, sports stars, politicians, and so on and so on. These are the world's heroes. Oh, look at them all, you know, and all these movie stars, and they're trained to take orders from the director. And yes, I'll repeat that line. Say that again, do it this way, stand this way, look this way, get that look on your face. And they are the heroes in this world. They're not God's heroes. Notice the phrase, these all. You see that? All these, says the New American Standard Version, these all, says the King James Version, these all. That meant even Jephthah. You remember Jephthah was mentioned a few things ago. Jephthah, what was he? He was the son of a harlot. His father had an extramarital affair, and she became pregnant. He was born from a harlot. His other brothers and sisters, you know, came from his mother, the one woman married to his father. And he was driven out. And he became a ruffian. He just became, kind of a tough guy. He was a street guy. He was fighting, got into trouble. He went along with what they called no good fellows, you know, the men of Belial. He just went with them. And so these all include Jephthah. These all include Rahab, who was a harlot. Followed her all her life, you know, followed right into the chapter 11. Rahab the harlot, she's called. You know, some sins just, they can follow you. But anyhow, Jephthah and Rahab, these all, having gained approval. Jephthah gained approval. Rahab gained approval. Sarah gained approval. All these people gained approval through faith. They are God's heroes. These all, every last one of them, gained a good reputation by their obedience through faith. This means, brethren, if all these people, in chapter 11, every single one of them, it said, these all, having gained approval through faith, if every one of these people gained approval, some of them came from lowly backgrounds, some people came from weak backgrounds, some people came from non-confident backgrounds, some people came from messed up families, some people came from, you know, this and that. This means that anyone can live and do great things by faith. Anyone can gain God's approval by faith. It doesn't matter whether you're famous or you're nondescript. It doesn't matter whether you're rich or poor. It doesn't matter whether you're male or female. It doesn't matter whether you have high status. I mean, you come from a high social status. You, your people, your family came over on the Mayflower. Or you just came across the border. It doesn't matter. It means Everyone who has come, everyone who's lived, maybe you didn't live an upright life before, and maybe you had a lot of other sins, but everyone can live by faith if they surrender their life to God's will. Becoming obedient by faith. So here's what it says. All these having gained approval through their faith. Notice that in verse 39. Through their faith. Now the world requires... How do you gain approval in the world? You want to get the world's approval. Well, first of all, you could probably gain a lot of money and you'll gain approval. You know, what did Gates do, the head of Microsoft? Bill Gates gained approval because he invented this and got billions of dollars. Other people gained approval because they ran for office. Gained approval. Now, in the world, you have to gain approval through something, through brilliance, through fame, through social approval, through beauty, through talents. See, these are all the things that the world uses to gain approval. What does God use? But God requires what? Faith. And the obedience to His will that faith brings with it. In fact, chapter 11, this same chapter, verse 6 says, without faith, it's impossible to please God. You're not going to get God's approval. You can't even please God without faith. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. Yes. So these people gained approval through their faith. But notice this. They did not receive what was promised. Verse 39. And all these, having gained approval through their faith, did not receive what was promised. Well, what was wrong with them? Well, nothing. Nothing wrong with them. So it's obvious that we all need to be patient. They certainly needed to be patient. We need to be patient. Everybody needs patience. When you're dealing with God, I want God to come now. I want this to happen now. I want this to happen now. I want, when is Christ coming back? I want it to happen right away. When, how many years? Patience is what we need. Patience. It's obvious we need to be here. Psalm chapter 27, verse 14. Psalm 27, verse 14. Wait for the Lord. Be strong and let your heart take courage. Yes, wait for the Lord. That's what it says, Psalm 27:14. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 36. He exhorts right here in the same book, the previous chapter, for you have need of endurance. That word means patient endurance. Keep going on with patience so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what was promised. And the beautiful passage from the book of James, chapter 5, verses 7 and 8. Therefore, be patient, brethren. Be patient until the coming of the Lord. Then he gives you an analogy. The farmer waits for the precious produce of the soil. It doesn't do you any good. Now, I kind of give you a little secret about me a little bit. When I plant stuff, I'm obsessive, okay? I have to go out every morning and see how much it's growing. I want to see if it's growing. Has it grown this much? Has it grown? And I want to see, when is it getting? And then all of a sudden, I do that about 10 or 15 days in a row, and then all of a sudden, I forget it. And then I go out, and it's really big, but it's surrounded by weeds because I haven't looked at it and haven't done any weeding in the garden. Boy, I turn my back on it, and next thing you know, that thing has grown up. How many of you have known people, young people, and you just you hadn't seen them in a while, you hadn't thought of them, you got your own thing, they may be a distant cousin, it may be a distant nephew, it may be a distant person that you, or a friend that you knew, and they had kids, and they were little kids like this, and now you go, and while you were doing other things, all this growth was taking place. I remember how impatient I was for my son to grow up. Now it's all done. It's all happened. You know, it's all gone. It's all done. He's grown up. Yeah, patience. James says, be patient. You know, they put the precious produce of the soil, being patient about it until it gets the early and the late rains. And verse 8, this is James 5, verse 8. You too, he says, you too, be patient. Strengthen your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is near. How near is it? Well, depends on how long you live. Because the coming of the Lord is going to be the next flash moment of your life when you die. So Hebrews, and now this is sort of a repeat of Hebrews chapter 11, verse 13. You remember, all these died in faith without having received the promises, but having seen them, having welcomed them from a distance, and having confessed that they were strangers and exiles in the earth. Same verse, same type of verse. They didn't see them. They had to wait. They had to wait for God's promise. They had to wait for God's intervention. They had to wait. Now, here's the real reason that they didn't receive the promise. Verse 40. It says, because. Okay? All these having gained approval. They gained approval through their faith. They did very well. Did not receive the promise because. Why? Because they were bad? Because some of them, you know, goofed up? Some of them did this wrong or that? No. Because God had provided something better. For whom? For us. Paul is now writing to New Testament saints. He's writing to New Testament Christians. And God provided something better for us so that apart from us, they would not be made perfect. Now, New Testament saints do have it better than Old Testament saints. There's no doubt about it. In fact, in the book of Hebrews, it is so emphasized, the word better is emphasized over and over again in this book. Let's take a look at some passages just for short. Hebrews chapter 7 and verse 19. For the law made nothing perfect. And on the other hand, there is a bringing in of a better hope through which we draw near to God. First of all, what do we have? We have a better hope than they had. Chapter 7, verse 22. So much more also, Jesus has become the guarantee of a better covenant. We have a better hope than they had. We have a better covenant than they had. Chapter 9, verse 23. Therefore, it was necessary for the copies of the things in the heavens to be cleansed with these, but the heavenly, he's talking about sacrifices, the copies of the things in the heaven, means the temple. The temple that was here on earth is a copy of the temple where God sits in the heavens. It says these have to be cleansed with these other physical sacrifices, but the heavenly things themselves with better sacrifices. Jesus Christ is a better sacrifice than the bulls and the goats and the Old Testament things. Hebrews 10, verse 34. For you showed sympathy to the prisoners, accepting joyfully the seizure of your property. He's talking to these Hebrew Christians, knowing that you have for yourself a better possession. And a lasting one. We have a better, something that's going to be ours is going to be our possession. Better and a lasting one. So, in every way, being a New Testament saint is better than being an Old Testament saint. Almost every single way. Almost every single. Because Jesus said this, Matthew chapter 13. Listen to what he said in verse 17. Matthew 13, verse 17. For truly I say to you that many prophets and righteous men Abraham was a righteous man. I don't know how much of a prophet he was, but he was a righteous man. You know, Isaac was a righteous man, so on. Desired to see what you see. He says this to his disciples. Many of them desired to see what you see and did not see it. They desired to hear what you hear, and they did not hear it. We have the things that they saw. We have the things that they heard right here in front of us on this text. The New Testament. New Testament saints. And yet, it's not like, by the way, it's not like that the New Testament saints have nothing to look forward to. You know, we do still have the things to look forward to, don't we? Because listen to what he says. That apart, this is verse 40 now, the last part, that apart from us, they would not be made perfect. Okay? They would not be made. Now that word, okay, even then, even though we have more promises, even though we have seen more revelations than Old Testament saints, we still have the promise of the same things to come. They're going to be made perfect. We're going to be made perfect. Perfect. That Greek word means completed. It means filled up. It means accomplished. It means to bring to a full measure. Fill it up to the full. Bring it up to the full measure. It means to bring it to the end goal, the end result. Let's bring it to its absolute apex of the end result. That's what it means. So they, apart from us, okay, God has something provided something better for us. Well, we already have a better covenant. We already have better promises. We have better sacrifices. We have all these things are better. Better sacrifice, better possession, better promises, and so on. But apart from us, they would not be made perfect. We're all going to have to complete. God has to complete us. You know, we all talk about, you know, as though, and there's a little bit of a misunderstanding in the days of unleavened bread. It's almost as though you put out all the leaven, right? You put it out. You're so righteous. You're so holy. You never make a mistake. But that's not so. That's not so. You don't do that. You know, you're so fallible, and you always miss something. Most people miss something. Most people make a mistake. Most people don't get all every crumb. You can't get it all. But here's the thing. It's God who's going to perfect you. God has to do that last part. He has to make you perfect. That they, without us, can't be made perfect. And God's going to do the making of you perfect. He's going to take all the things, all your, you know, we all have weaknesses. We all have our idiosyncratic behaviors. We all have our failings. We all have our, you know, our personality deficits. We all have our egos. We all have our lusts. We all have our things that happen to us. That we're not perfect, but God's going to make us perfect. What does God want from us? Wholeheartedness. God wants our whole heart. He wants us to be filled with Him. He wants us to want that so that we cry out to Him, so that we ask God, make us, bring us to that perfection. You can do. We're not perfect in this life. You can't be. Not going to be. You're going to continue to make mistakes. You're going to continue to wish you hadn't said that, wish you had said something else, wish you had done something better, wish you had done. Always, God is going to make us perfect. And the time of perfection, when's that time of perfection? When? At the return of Jesus Christ, at the last trump. The trumpet shall sound, and we shall be changed. In a moment, in a twinkling of an eye. This mortal will have put on immortality. Okay? This mortal will put on, and we will then be changed into something completely, completely different from the way we are now. Because you're not going to be the absolute pinnacle of perfection in this life. They weren't. And I'm talking about great people here, right? We're talking about Abraham, Noah, all these great people that we see in the Old Testament. And there are great people in the New Testament. You know, Stephen and Paul and John and all these great people. They, without us, will not be made perfect. We have to be made perfect. They're going to be made perfect. And God's going to do that. And you know why? That's so that no flesh can brag. Nobody can brag. Oh, I did it. Look at me, God, how good I am. No. No, you can't. You're going to throw yourself. And that's why it's very humbling on the night to be on the night that we take the Lord's Supper, we take the bread and the wine. When you look at that wine, you're saying, somebody shed their blood for me. Somebody gave their life for me, their body, their life. The body just means the whole life. He gave everything. He gave himself. And the blood poured out of that body. He gave himself for me. It's humbling. That means you didn't do it. That means somebody had to do it. Somebody had to cleanse you. And we renew that covenant with him. The time of perfection at the return of Jesus Christ, when the angel shouts and all the world's nations will become the nations that become the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ, and he will reign forever and ever. We will be made perfect with these saints. Without us, I mean, talk about a very nice thing. You and me, before this was, we weren't known before this was written. But it applies to us. Without us, they won't be made perfect. At that time then, brethren, that's when you can say the old title of the song. That's when the saints go marching home.